Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, thank you. Welcome to another episode of Zenith Now. This episode's called Three Ways You Can Be an Effective Philosopher Now. So let's get straight to it, because that's what everybody wants you to do, and that's important, because you want to do what other people want you to do. You want to do what's expected. I am something of a philosopher. You have to understand there are no amateur philosophers. All philosophers are amateurs. There's certain things that they do, but anybody can do them. It's not like you have to have a special degree or not. I was going to bring this up a little bit later, but we might as well bring it up now. There's a big difference. You know, people, when they think about philosophy, they think about doctors of philosophy, guys that go to school for many years and study all kinds of stuff. And then they get a piece of paper that says that what they've studied and what they've learned. They have to actually do a dissertation, typically, and then have to defend that dissertation. The assumptions that they make, they have to do research and stuff like that. It's all very wonderful. It's made to make sure that you don't have dimwit, dumb doctors of philosophy. I don't know, maybe it's even more just kind of a culling out of people that don't really want that. And that's totally different from being a philosopher. A philosopher is very simple. It's a term that means a lover of wisdom. You don't have to be brilliant. You don't have to be wise yourself, particularly. Of course, nobody's saying that when you have a doctor of philosophy, you're wise, particularly. You don't have to be. You know, it just says that you've gone through the work required to gain this credential. Very simple. I work in the field of information technology, and I've gotten various certificates, you know, that say I've got this credential, this credential, this credential. I know the basics of networking. I've got a networking credential. I know the basics of computers. I've got a computer credential. I know the basics of Linux. I didn't get the point. And it's wonderful to be credentialed. Get all the credentials you can. I struggle with it because they cost so much gosh golly money that you feel this incredible need to try and make up for that. Like just recently I finished up my master's degree. It's a master's degree in network management. And there's this incredible need. I spent about $10,000 total on the whole thing, actually a little less than that. Rather cheap, not bad. I got it predominantly because it was cheap and predominantly because having a master's degree opens up new vistas for you, and that's wonderful. And so I did that, but now I've got this incredible need to use it. But you know what? I don't want to really be a manager. I don't want to, you know, I like, I'm kind of a grease monkey. I like getting down in the, I like actually doing the work. I don't like the bulk of my job managing the work going on, you know, being in charge of people. I'm not into that. I'm much more of a self-managing, self-motivated sort of a person. I expect other people to be that way, and I get really kind of distressed when I don't have people like that. So I just don't know what to do with that management degree. When I see people who have those kind of credentials and what they end up doing, I find I'm not interested in doing that job. It's kind of sad. It's important to know what the difference between being a philosopher and a doctor of philosophy is, because you might lead yourself down the wrong road. I don't know if I went down the wrong road. Although I'm trying to find wisdom, sometimes wisdom is something that costs a lot. Sometimes it's something that you spend 18 months or 2 years or 5 years or whatever going down a road, and you say, you know what, once you've gotten to a certain point, you say, I don't remember why I was going down this road. It's important to keep track of why you're doing stuff, so that once you're done with it, you can say, okay, I accomplished that, good. so you can feel better. So you're not constantly coming back and saying things like, I've got to get a job in management, whether I like it or not, because I need to justify the expenditure of time and money that I made. I'm not doing that. And I recall exactly why I went after my master's degree. I wanted to be able to immigrate to other countries if I wanted to. I knew that information technology is something every single country wants more of. Don't ask me why. Because I'm not really sure. I think it's all about money and about statistics and stuff like that. I don't think it has anything to do with you actually wanting those kinds of people and wanting more of them. You're wanting to compete in this new information technology age, I guess. Anyway, so I wanted to be able to do that. I also wanted, I was having a real concern because when I went for jobs, I thought the fact that I didn't have a degree in what I was doing might be detrimental. It might be keeping me from doing jobs. I always wanted to be among the top candidates for any job that I went for. So, bing, I said, I need to get a degree in this. I looked out. I already had a bachelor's degree in home economics, which I'm very happy to have because I think home economics is one of the most vital, important skills that you can have. If you can't manage yourself, if you can't manage your home on some level, if you can't take a critical look at the things that are closest to you, how on earth are you going to, how on earth are you going to deal with anything else in any kind of an intelligent way? So I have never been discouraged or disparaged. Most people come back and say, that's not a real degree. That's a degree that girls get when they're looking for husbands and they can't do anything better. And you go, oh, contrairement prayer. Anyway, I got my specialty in child development. Now, of course, I'm blacklisted. Because I came back and said that I felt like the whole realm of child development is something of a farce. What it's being used for is kind of a evil, wicked social work sort of agenda, and I didn't like it, so I was very happy to get out of it altogether and to speak against it, too. I'll do it on the show here. But in the future, I'm not going to do it particularly now. I take down notes just before I do these recordings, and I put them out there. I'm not saying I'm some paragon of anything. I'm not a great radio host. I'm not trying to be a great radio host particularly. Everybody says I should. If you're going to do it, do well enough to do it right. And you go, you know what? They're correct. So that's where the title comes from. Three ways you can be an effective philosopher now. I've learned over the years, it didn't take much looking around to see people who were successful and one of the things that you learn from successful people, especially ones that are like on the internet and things like that, is that they make lists and they share their lists with you. And so I'm here to share a list with you. And the most important thing is, number one, if you're going to say that you're going to give three ways to be an effective philosopher now, make sure you do that. Now, I'm always discouraged because I figure that when somebody's giving me a list, they're going to tell me stuff that I don't know. And I'm sad because when I get done with it, I didn't learn anything from them, but I got caught in a couple of things. Number one, I read the article. Number two, that guy got listened to and watched, and somebody accessed their thing, which is exactly what gets them paid. I can't think of a third thing. That's really all you need. He's doing what needs to be done to get paid. He or she, I don't need to be specific here. So I've got to be honest. If I'm going to sit here and tell you I'm going to give you three ways to be an effective philosopher now, I intend on doing it. So we've already talked a little bit about philosophy and how it's essentially different from being a doctor of philosophy, having a doctorate. Let me tell you something a little bit else about about academia, things like that, things that I've learned from it. I am not an expert on it, but I can tell you one thing. It's all about the orthodoxy. It has a lot to say. When you hold a doctorate in philosophy, in any subject at all, it means, number one, that you've studied that field. That's the orthodoxy. You've studied what they mean. I didn't choose to continue my education in child development, for instance, because I didn't like the orthodoxy of it. The orthodoxy of it had a lot to do with certain attitudes you were supposed to have, certain ways you were supposed to behave, certain just everything. You wouldn't be able to go to a child development conference, even if you had a PhD in child development, you wouldn't be able to do it for very long, because they find out pretty soon that you weren't preaching the orthodoxy. And that's what a PhD is supposed to do, preach the orthodoxy. Let me tell you, if you are a PhD and you aren't teaching what you're supposed to be teaching, preaching what you're supposed to be preaching, doing stuff like that, you're not going to get jobs in academia particularly. You're going to find it difficult to share your ideas in the first place. You know, and you'll very soon find out that it's all about having studied certain people and stuff like that. Of course, nobody ever conveniently talks about how these guys got to be the great pillars of, like, child development, for instance, Piaget, Erickson, people like that, where you're going, oh, yes, I know all about what they're doing. And the kind of research they want to see is research basically on those topics. They're really not very interested. And this is funny because they constantly tell you, we want you to add something, you know, to be a doctor of philosophy. Your dissertation is supposed to add to the body of knowledge in your field. But that's interesting because they don't want you to stray from the formula, from the orthodoxy of the field. They want you to add to the orthodoxy, strengthen it perhaps. And that's really, really important. You'll see that so much everywhere. And it's nowhere more vivid than if you have some ideas that are considered off the wall, you're not getting a job. It's not going to happen. They don't care how nice and well-penned your dissertation was. They don't care what big name school you got your doctorate from. It doesn't matter. I was just, before I started doing this, and I was looking at how Blog Talk Radio helps you to market your recordings, and it's a really good way to do it. They give you a little thing, you know, you need to connect to your profile on Facebook. You need to make sure that every episode pops up on your Twitter account. It's called generating noise. You know, people aren't going to hear you if you're not generating a little bit of noise. You know, and it goes totally against the whole thing about the doctor of philosophy. They're actually about not generating noise. It's just about saying what people want to have said. You know, academia is mostly about being a teacher and things like that. They don't want you teaching something that is against the orthodoxy. So it's almost kind of funny. Marketing and philosophy and having a doctorate are almost two different things. You almost have to break away from the orthodoxy in order to have something to say that is interesting for Facebook and Twitter or for whatever other kind of marketing you're going to do. I've always stayed away from Facebook and Twitter because I felt like they were just opium for the masses and that you were more likely to be used by these things, you know. It was a great way to make money off of you. And I don't, you know, I'm not cheap. I try to, well, no, I am cheap. I'm very cheap. But it's supposed to make things, it's all about handing all of your money around to other people. That generates more money. I think it actually does work. That is the basis of marketing. And it works well. I always had a philosophical problem with it myself. Because I was always being concerned that I was being used by it. I've got this weird censor, the whole thing about I don't want to get caught up into some kind of orthodoxy that I don't believe in. So, but I know from a marketing standpoint, boy, if I had Facebook, boy, if I had Twitter, if I used them, I would get more attention than I do now, at least from my family, I suppose. Anyway, that becomes the big thing. I enjoy philosophy. It's just thinking and ruminating about things and trying to find wisdom. Sometimes you find a wisdom from other people, sometimes you have to discover it yourself. I've always been a guy that's been really weird about being creative, being creating things, creating ideas. You should be writing, you should be building, you should be drawing, you should be doing all those kinds of things. You should be speaking. You should make something and put it out there for people to see. I've written books, I've written essays, they're all out there. Now, whether I market them well is a whole other thing. And I've always kind of hoped foolishly, stupidly, that they were so good that people would notice them, which is garbage. You have to market it. I'm sorry. People just don't have time to be going around and looking. You have to give them some kind of incentive. You've got to make it easy for them. People are not going to just, millions of people aren't going to go and grab on to something unless there's some reason to do it besides the fact that it's just, well, that's a pretty interesting thing. One of the other things that you've got that I decided to share in this little time that we have together here is that if you say you're going to do something, you need to do it. People need to be able to trust you. That's a big thing. If you're a novel writer and you write mystery novels and stuff like that, number one, people expect that when your name is on it, that's number one, it's a mystery novel. Number two, that it's going to be good because hopefully you've done good things. And they feel gypped or shortchanged or whatever if you don't do that. If all of a sudden, it's like J.K. Rowling, for instance. She did the Harry Potter books, and when she does books, people expect them to be like Harry Potter. If it doesn't have those characters, it'll at least be the same style, and it's supposed to attract the same kinds of people. Of course, that was a huge phenomenon. A lot of people beyond just genre read it, and I never got down to reading it. I watched the movies because my family wanted it. And I liked some of the things out of it. I wasn't very impressed. It's not my kind of stuff, but that's okay. But if J.K. Rowling comes out with some other book, it's troublesome. She actually did an adult book. I don't know how much it was like Harry Potter or not. She used a pseudonym to do it. I don't know if she's trying to prove to herself that she could be a writer beyond Harry Potter. Very soon after it got out, they leaked that she had written it, and all of a sudden the sales of it went up. So, it may have been a marketer saying, well, she's really good. Let's just see how she does in another genre. And they found out that it wasn't, didn't, nobody didn't seem to care much about. Now, I'm not a paragon of market research either to know how it went, but it seemed like after that it was revealed that she had written this book really under a pseudonym, that all of a sudden it sold a little bit better because people wanted J.K. Rowling stuff. It was hard because they all said, hey, if it's not Harry Potter, if it's not a youth book, you're going to lose your audience, and you need to make sure you don't do that. Anyway, so it's all about that. So I better make good on my promise to give you three ways to be an effective philosopher now, and let me tell you what they are. And I tried to make them different things so that you can understand that there's more to the, I don't know what I'm trying to make you understand. Let me just give you the three things, and you can come with your own decisions about what you think about. Number one, park far away from the door. Have you ever been in a parking lot and there's people that constantly troll around and troll around and troll around, waiting for someone close to the door, a parking spot close to the door, to open up? They'll stop and wait for 5 minutes while you unload your stuff into your car, get into your car, put on all your stuff, turn on the car, back up, and drive away. They'll wait there for 5 minutes wanting to get your spot. You know what? I consider that silly. Now, I know people do certain things, and I know people say, well, I'm fat and I don't want to have to walk too far. And you go, well, there's one reason why you might be a little overweight, is that you're spending way too much time sitting in cars waiting for the perfect spot to open up. I park way out in the back of parking lots. Number one, I don't like to be crowded around by a bunch of cars particularly. And plus, hey, it gives you a chance to get a little exercise walking all the way to the door and all the way back. You should see me at work. There's actually several parking lots closer to the building that I work in than the one I park in. I park quite far away. In fact, I park where my friends tell me that all the disgruntled people get. If you get into trouble for doing something, I work on an Air Force base. If you get in trouble for speeding on base or driving crazy or whatever, breaking some traffic law, they make you park in a certain lot and make you walk. It's punishment. Well, I park in that lot just because I need to get more walking in. It's part of my regimen to make sure that I don't get too chubby. I'm already having problems anyway, pre-diabetic. They just came back and said, we can't get diabetic. And you go, okay, well, then I'll make some more changes. I'll park further away from work so that I have to walk more. Walk at a pretty good clip, all that stuff. So there's number one, park far away from the door. I've only got 7 minutes left. I better hurry. Number two, wash dishes by hand. My best thinking happens when I'm hunched over a sink washing dishes, doing something else. One of the things I can do is I can listen to other people. I can't wash dishes and talk at the same time. And that's a good thing. I think my wife would probably love me to wash more dishes just to shut me up. And I can listen to the various podcasts I like listening to. I can listen to the BBC News that I like listening to. All those things I do while I'm washing dishes. It gives me a chance to think as well. Sometimes I just turn everything off and I'm just thinking about stuff while I'm sitting there struggling away washing dishes. You can have a dishwasher do it. That's technically more efficient. It's just like parking your car far away from the door. There is a little more work involved, and I think in that work is wisdom, my friend of philosophy. You're trying to be a lover of wisdom, try and just be smarter. I don't give a flip if I ever get my doctorate in philosophy particularly, because I don't want to really listen to what other people think, And it has a whole lot to do with studying other philosophers. That's what doctors of philosophy end up doing. They end up being students of Aristotle. They end up being students of Bertrand Russell or Machiavelli, Adam Smith. You name it. And it really just is like, well, it's really great that you've read all these people and you know what they said, and maybe even you can speak persuasively, trying to explain to other people what they said. That's predominantly what a doctor of philosophy, let's say your field of study is philosophy, that's predominantly what you're going to do, and that's what you're going to earn that degree for doing. And then you're going to be around to teach it to other people. It has nothing to do with you, although you'll definitely say, this is what I learned from Plato. And you go, it seems like you're only allowed to be a filter of the great thinkers of the past. You go, you're not really expected to be a great thinker of the future. Anyway, I might still get that PhD, but I'll probably be getting it just so that people will, you know, so I can broaden my horizons a little bit that way. I'm concerned that it'll close my horizons otherwise. Here is the last bit of wisdom, number three. I promise you three ways you can be a more reflective philosopher now. Here's number three. This is from my wife, and I love it. It says, use nice sheets on your bed. Nothing is going to screw up your life, make you more unhappy, make life less fulfilling than not getting a good night's sleep. By golly, whoever came up with mattresses that are soft and or comfortable for you or work for you, than that. My wife loves high thread count sheets. She is a believer. So what, we spend some extra money and we get that, or we use flannel sheets during the wintertime. Right now we're in our flannel sheet phase. That will drop off soon, and we'll put on the higher thread count sheets, and it's because it just helps everybody sleep better. I sleep better, she sleeps better. Well, happy people. It's fantastic. And that way you can be more attuned to wisdom. If you're grumbling, grouchy, and always upset because you don't have enough sleep, how much wisdom are you going to be able to gain? How much are you going to be able to pass along to others? Sad, sad state of affairs. Well, that's all I really have time for this particular episode. I hope you enjoyed three ways you can be an effective philosopher now. Hopefully that marketing will spark something and people will go, oh, look, I'm going to learn something. That's what people want to do when they get on these little broadcasts. They want to learn something. They don't just want to sit there and listen to you chit-chat and jibber-jabber, which is what I think I normally do. They want to learn something. Give them something to learn every time. Make sure and come to all the traditional places. Go to my Blogspot page. Quixen, quixen.blogspot.com. Take a look at stuff there. There's all kinds of stuff going back. Maybe we'll talk about it on here. Maybe we won't. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Anyway, I'm really glad that you paid. You paid me some mind. You came in, you listened. Have a great day.